First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
While you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, make sure you do two things for us, please. Join our email and newsletter, and we will send information to you direct to your inbox on a weekly or a monthly basis. We don't do that daily spam that most people do to you guys. Also, while you're at it, join the RSS feed so we can make sure that the radio shows get delivered direct to your inbox. For those of you who appreciate what we do, we appreciate you. But if you can, help us out a little bit. We've got a donate button and a GoFundMe page so we can keep this mission alive. Please be generous if you can. In the meantime, numbers for the show, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For those of you in the listening queue, we appreciate you. There's always a bunch of you. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard live on air. And for everybody else, the chat room is open. Yes, you can join the live chat now and put your opinions in there if you so wish. And you can sign in with your Facebook and Twitter accounts, so we even have social media available for you. Been a long weekend, been a crazy working day, but I tell you what, that's nothing unusual to start the week. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, hanging in there, Mr. Springston. It's only Monday, and it's like, oh, yeah, getting over this cold. Now we're bracing for another, what do they call it, a polar vortex coming in. I'm like, oh, God, there we go.
That's what I heard, man. I haven't had a chance to tell you. I've been so busy. I haven't had a chance to check on this weather or this polar vortex. A partner of mine who's actually here in the studio tonight, we've been working our tails off all weekend and all the way through today and probably till midnight tonight. So I haven't really had a chance to check out things like the weather. What are they saying is coming on?
Sometime Tuesday evening, we're supposed to have a cold front move through, and be a couple days where the highs are in the 30s, so it's like, yeah, man.
Awesome. Snow? Do we get snow?
They're talking it might happen come Saturday or something like that. So.
Super.
Like, oh, no, not super. I am one cheap son of a bitch, and I don't like turning the heat on in the house. It costs money, you know. I like this weather right here. It's pretty all right.
I don't mind the snow, and I don't mind the cold. I, call me crazy, but I got used to that many, many years ago. I was one of those people who didn't like snow, was always cold in the wintertime, made a lot of money shoveling snow, don't get me wrong, when I was a young guy. But, man, after I went to North Dakota and spent 4 years there in the military, you get used to 50 and 60 below, sub-zero temperatures, wind chills, the whole bit, 10, 12 feet of snow, snow drifts everywhere. I love it. I don't know. I adjusted to it then, and I never adjusted back to freezing like everybody does today. So I don't know. I don't mind it. Everybody else seems to have a problem with it. I personally enjoy it. So it's not an issue with me. I tell you what is an issue with me, though. Everything that's been going on and crazy the last week, we haven't had a chance to talk with you. Because, our show was Monday night of last week, so I haven't had a chance to touch base with you since the elections on a Tuesday. I'm kind of curious to see what you think. Was there any big surprises? You know, did you think that we had a lot of gain? I mean, what's your thoughts on that whole process?
Well, not the only surprise I had, and I'll admit it was a pleasant surprise, was Devin Bratcher. I really thought, and the reports coming in, Bill Sullivan's the former GOP head, he thought the same way. I mean, the Democrats really went all in on that race, you know, picking a big name candidate to put up against Bratcher. And, I liked him. I'm glad he won, but I just, I'll be honest, in a district that Single had held previously, I had a bad feeling about it. I thought it was going to be close, but I thought Bratcher might lose, which, again, would have been a loss for that district. But that he put a pretty good trouncing on Stengel was pretty freaking awesome, and I was pretty surprised. So, yeah, that was about the only surprise that I came up with, that I saw.
I tell you, I was very pleased with Kevin Bratcher winning myself. Kevin Bratcher, he is really one of those good guys in Frankfort. He's one of those class guys. And Dave Stengel, of course, had the seat before, and then he went into the, Commonwealth Attorney's Office and all that good stuff. But the reality is, that was a long time ago. The Democrats went all in on that race, spent a ton of money trying to convince the whole world that Dave Stengel was not a drunk who had ethics and problems and couldn't handle, doing the law and everything else and being legal in the law, as he proved with Matt Conway. Everybody knows now the real Dave Stengel. So if he would have went into that race blind, the Democrats' money might have really hurt Kentucky by allowing him to get elected, because they would have took a great man out of office like Kevin Bratcher. So I'm like you. I'm thankful for that as well. But the truth is, no matter how much money you put out there, when you put lipstick on a pig, at the end of the day, it's still a pig. And I think Dave Stengel proved that he qualifies for that distinction. So I'm with you on that race. I tell you what was really interesting, though. And this was the surprise to me. It's like I did this whole story on it last week because I just couldn't believe it. But Mark Twain once said that when he dies, he wants to go to Kentucky because we do everything 20 years too late. And the interesting thing is I think we saw that on a national scale on Tuesday, because as the whole country was finally wising up and realizing this liberal left agenda simply does not work in this nation, and they were electing conservative Republicans and conservative candidates, here in Kentucky, especially in Louisville, nothing changed. There was no gains in the House, as it was expected to do by the Republicans. The local elections went according to plan. All the lying Democrats who continue lying to the poor and downtrodden in this city got their jobs. But tragically, most of those people were unopposed. And if you really need truth, that people are disgusted, but we still can't move ahead, let's look at the mayor's race, Ed. Greg Fisher ran against nobody, essentially. You can say Bob DeVore was on the ballot, but he's essentially nobody. No money, no name recognition, no ideas, no plans, and quite frankly, he runs in an election every year just to run for something. He's like the Burl Farnsley this year in the mayor's race. And Greg Fisher still only got 68% of the vote, and I haven't had a chance to look at the total and the numbers yet, but from what I've been told, the indications are that 40% of the voters in Jefferson County that voted Democrat voted straight party ticket Democrat. And with that being the case, Greg Fisher got a lot less than 68% of the people who actually voted for him and not the party. I thought that was astonishing.
Well, I think it's astonishing. Of course, I'm sitting here chuckling. You know, you say DeVore was not present or anything. For anybody who's ever viewed a Bob DeVore video or anything, he's worse than not having a candidate to run against. I mean, because it really is so bad that if Bob DeVore were running against, you know, nobody, or you know, none of the above, he would lose because you would just look at it and say, oh, my God. You know?
So, I agree. And that's what made that race
so interesting. Nobody. He ran against something that if you even looked at one of his videos, you would put against him no matter who was running against him, yet he still got 30-some-odd% of the vote. So it's like, wow.
31% of the people. Yeah, 31% of the people. Right. 31% of the people voted against Greg Fisher. They would have voted for anybody. So 31% of the people voted against Fisher, and 40% of the rest voted straight party. So none of those people actually chose Greg Fisher. And that should tell us a lot about the poor situation we had, Republicans, right here in Jefferson County. This party in Jefferson County, the Jefferson County Republican Party, is abysmal. They can't get anybody to run for office. And I've heard the argument, and I've been chastised all week, you know, for the same thing. Well, you can't make people run for office. It ain't their fault. Well, that is the problem, because you're right. You cannot make people run for office. But when people were willing to put their name out there and go through the public humiliation that comes with running for office, because I don't care who you are, there's an amount of public humiliation that comes with running for office. You know, put your family through that and everything else. You have to at least know that you have support from the machine. And that's where the Jefferson County Republican Party has dropped the ball. They have not supported local candidates. So local candidates are scared to get excited, and they just choose not to run. Why go through it if it's a guaranteed loss because you don't have a base? And that has been a disturbing. I think we saw that again Tuesday. Am I right or wrong about that?
I would say you're right. Now, you know, and in all fairness, I do see where it, you know, I haven't been involved in the administration of the Libertarian Party some. It's an awkward position, you know, because the party can't step up and put money and resources behind every candidate. And some, let's face it, you got your Bob DeVore's out there. You got people who can say, you know, I want a piece of this ticket. I want a piece of the primary. Here's my 2 signatures and my $50 check, you know. And it's like at some point the party, it has to draw some parameters as, you know, who gets it. Because we saw that like in the Republican primary for Senate. You know, you had Matt Bevin and whatever, 2 or 3 other really weird people that one of them talked to somebody, some spirit or something. It was strange. So, yeah, I see why they have that problem. But, yeah, I think and money is sometimes it's hard to ask for people to give. When you look at the number of races front and back of the ballot, it's hard to ask people to give for 40 different races. I mean, my God, well, it was burnt.
How much money?
But what I'm getting at is it's not so much money, but the party should have a mechanism that helps people get out, helps somebody get out the vote. If you don't spend a lot of money, you're probably not going to get attacked too hard. But the party needs to be able to defend candidates. The party needs to be able to attack on a candidate's behalf. And things that don't necessarily cost a lot of money, but yeah, you've got to support them. And that's something we found when we were in the Libertarian Party, is that, you know, the party will do what it can to help you, but the party would absolutely support a reasonable candidate. And that's, you know, that's something I've talked to Nathan Haney about. The GOP, you know, it's like, okay, so, you know, look, next time you need a candidate to run for an office, I'm not going to sit here and blow sunshine up anybody's butt. But, yeah, I could be talking into it, and I'm not going to write a check for $40,000.
Well,
the party support it. Even if it's a losing race, it's good for the party because if you put credible candidates up there that can express an idea that's not always just hardcore Tea Party or hardcore religious right or something.
Let me be clear. Let me be clear here, too. This isn't a dig against Nathan Haney, and I'll tell you why. Because I personally think that Nathan Haney has a lot of great ideas, great plans, and truthfully, I think his plans on what he wants to do with the party are fantastic. The problem is Nathan Haney is running into the same situation that his predecessors, such as Shelley May and others, have run into, and that is the fact that the old guard Republicans who have the money will not support the party from the money perspective. And when we look at the support that went on in Jefferson County, I mean, let's face facts here and be real clear. Mitch McConnell has been in office for 30 years, and Mitch McConnell has had 5 different Senate elections accordingly. And Mitch McConnell has won every one of those on a state level, but he has not ever won Jefferson County and Louisville. And that is the thing. Every election that Mitch McConnell is in, you don't see Republican candidates stepping up to the plate because the party will spend time, resources, and money to support Mitch McConnell instead of supporting the local races. And I think that is one of the biggest problems they've had here. And that's not a reflection on Nathan Haney. I've spoken to Nathan Haney, as you know, as well. And I've got a lot of respect for the young man trying to get things done. Unfortunately, he's up against a machine that just hasn't stepped down out of the way yet. I mean, the young Republicans, I think, are the way to go. But they're not going to be able to get there when you have lobbyists like John McCarthy, who's only beholden to the man with the silver dollar, and that's Mitch McConnell. And he's the biggest problem in the Jefferson County Republican Party today, but they're scared to let John McCarthy go because John McCarthy brings money in to at least aid Mitch McConnell and pay for a sign from time to time. So, you know, that's the big deal. But it was interesting, though, because we didn't make any strides in Kentucky at any level to move forward. But, yes, the rest of the country, you know, the party of the old white guy, Ed, you know, elected those like Mia Love, Tim Scott, an 18-year-old just graduated, you know, a high school graduate. You know, all of these people, you know, females, African-Americans, everybody, the conservatives basically rolled over the whole country and just put that whole myth that the Democratic Party has been running on for 50 years, making everybody a racist or a sexist. It just put that whole myth to shame. At least that's what I took out of it. And quite frankly, I was very happy to see it for that reason alone. How about you?
Yeah. It was a good run. Like I say, as far as Nathan Haney, I think the world of the guy. I like him. But he was in. He hasn't been in quite long enough. And he had some good candidates, and he had some, you know, it got some ground that totally unfurled right now, and the Democrat machine is strong, you know. But I hope they get there. I mean, like I said, they need to work. I've had suggestions for Nathan, just, you know, to try to loosen the party up a little bit, make the tent a little bigger. And I think one of the problems I really do is, and I'll just say it, it'll probably piss some Republicans off, but, you know, when you're trying to build a big tent party. And it goes along the lines with what you say. It seemed to be all about the big federal races. You look at who they were bringing in here to try to get out the vote. It was people like Mike Huckabee, who are these hardcore religious right people, national politics, you know, definitely a small tent Republican. You know, here's a guy who basically said, if the party keeps going, you know, doing this, doing that, you know, doesn't fight gay marriage, I'm going to take my ball and go home. You're a small tent Republican.
He brought him in
for Mitch, and I'm telling you, that alienates people, that turns people off. 61% of Republicans under the age of 40 are okay with gay marriage, and they wish you would just let it the hell go. I mean, I've told some people that I like, too, in a party. We had a debate about that. I said, gosh, that's known as staring down the barrel of a 45. 60% of your party, you know, if not going to be the cliche, scared old white people, 60% of the 40 members have a problem with this stuff, and you're throwing them You know, and they're quite put off by it. And it's like, so what you're telling me is you want to bring a guy like Huckabee in and alienate 60% of your young professionals and the kids that'll knock on, you know, the young folk that'll go knock on doors for you. You want to just put them off. It's like, yeah, so, and that was about Mitch. Huckabee came in here for Mitch. Huckabee didn't come in here for anybody else. And I, in fact, I know a few of the people that were running for office. A little uneasy being associated with somebody who would say, you know, hey, I'm going to take my ball and go home. You don't take a hard right social turn. You know, I know some people who were a little uncomfortable with that.
And I agree with that. I really do. I think you're 100% on target because, you know, we continue getting into these socially divisive issues. And one of the misconceptions going around the country right now is, well, the Republicans now have control of the House and the Senate. Now we can get things done. Well, what these people are not looking at is the reality. Let's face it. The Republican leaders before Tuesday's election were John Boehner, Speaker of the House, and Mitch McConnell, Minority Leader in the Senate. You had Nancy Pelosi, Minority Leader in the House, and Harry Reid, Majority Leader in the Senate. What has changed? Nothing. Four faces are the same. The only exception is now Mitch McConnell is the majority leader in the Senate. But you still have the two people who have been running the Republican Party for years in control of the Republican Party. You still have the same two people who have been running the Democratic Party for years still in control of the Democratic Party. So what's really going to change here? In my opinion, absolutely nothing. And it's because we continue to fall into that divisive crap like Huckabee, the short-sighted social issues that don't do a damn thing for the country. So I'm really curious to see what happens when they go back into full session in January. That's going to be really, really interesting because right now they're doing all the committee stuff and making plans, but they're not really going to do much after the first of the year. You know, one of the other things that really surprised me, we had talked repeatedly about how Alison Grimes was in over her head. All these internal polls, I told everybody that these internal polls were garbage. She wasn't going anywhere close on the polling. However, I did expect that race to be close, like a 52, you know, McConnell, you know, and 3% to Patterson and the rest to Grimes. I was way off. I have to admit that freely. Alice in Wonderland Grimes never even got out of the starting gate. And I was really shocked but pleased to see her lose so easily. It definitely stopped the governor's race for her. We'll get into the Jerry Abramson appointment in a minute, but it definitely stopped any thought of running for governor next year. And quite frankly, the margin was so large, I hope it stopped her political career in its tracks. What were your thoughts on that race?
Aside from the Bradford thing, I was stunned at the disparity. I wasn't stunned at, you know, the results. Incumbency has its advantages, and I think Allison was a bit of a lightweight candidate that, you got to be inspirational. You got to come in inspirational. Whether you're hated or loved or a little of both, you got to come in with, and be able to convince people that you believe what you're saying, like Rand Paul did when he came in. But beyond that, yeah, she was a lightweight. I figured a lot of the Democrat base out in the state would not be real enthusiastic about voting for her, and wow, I mean, it was just the earliness with which they called it was a bit of a shocker. I'll be honest, a lot of people were flipping out over her concession speech. I pretty much expected something like that from our little rich girl. So, yeah, I was kind of chuckling through her speech, like, wow, she looks like she's about to cry. Wow, she sounds like she's about to cry. And, like, she almost sounds pissed off about it.
I think she was pissed off. She was definitely pissed off. It was the worst concession speech I think I'd ever heard. It was certainly beneath the level of someone who had run for office of that stature. And quite frankly, she was pissed off. She was pissed off because she put her whole campaign in the hands of Barack Obama and Harry Reid. And guess what? It got handed to her on a silver platter. She found out that, you know, she basically ruined any political clout, in my opinion, that she had with Kentucky Democrat leadership. choosing to opt to go with the White House leadership, and that to me was a really telltale sign. The concession speech just made me feel more confident that I was right all along. Let's go to the phones. Paul, you're on the air.
Ed and Ed, where Ed. It's always said that two Eds are better than one. I like that.
I like where you're going with that. Thanks for the comments. We'll talk to you later. what's going on, my friend? What can we do for you?
Yeah, you guys probably aren't aware of this, but apparently your Block Talk radio site is not transmitting your show. I've tried it on two different computers and three different browsers. I'm not getting audio anywhere. So,
well, I guess I'll go up
Block
to the
Talk
podcast.
Radio is not doing you any favors. But anyway, anybody who listens to this show and is listening now, I want to ask you both, Eds. Are you guys voters?
Of course.
Are you guys? Absolutely. Are you American voters? Are you American voters?
No. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, all American voters were absolutely made fun of today. A story was published in a website called the Daily Caller, where it was revealed that the architect of Obamacare actually said Obamacare could never pass because of the stupidity of American voters. The stupidity. One of Obama's chief counselors and architects has expressed verbally to the Daily Caller, and they've got the video on this too, so it's not like the Daily Caller is reporting this secondhand.
Right.
They've got the video. But this guy absolutely said American voters are stupid. That's why and the Office of Management and Budget would have caught the fact that this was a tax increase had they not gone to great lengths to keep transparency from happening. Now, guys, I know that everyone listening believes that there was a whole lot of duplicity and cover-up on this entire Obamacare run-up. This guy here, his name is Jonathan something or another. Jonathan has revealed that infamous phrase that Nancy Pelosi uttered, "We got to pass it to see what's in it." She, Harry Reid, John Yarmuth, every damn Democrat was in on the con job. And this was a major, major con job. They've admitted it now. Now, Ed, you like smoking guns. This is about as good a smoking gun as one can get.
Oh, I'm with you there. And I tell you, real quick, if I may, I just went onto my phone and brought up the show, and it's actually broadcasting fine on that outlet, so I don't know what's going on.
On that phone, okay.
Yeah, it's actually
sure
broadcasting fine on the phone. I'm listening to the website right there on the phone, so I just want to make sure we got that out there. You know, I don't think the American people are stupid. I think that the American people are probably waking up and smarter today than they were just a short 7 days ago, and I think they proved that last Tuesday. This whole Obamacare thing is going to be the biggest issue going forward, I believe, in January. When we look at go ahead.
But see, Ed, this Obamacare, people that are advising him, this is let's take this and make it a little bit more macro, okay? Ed Martin likes to do macro, so let's go macro with this.
Ed Allison Martin likes to do macaroni and cheese. Let's get that right, but go ahead.
But the Grimes campaign, obviously.
I just wanted to that joke. The intellectual throat pulled off after that joke has just bottomed out. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
But the Grimes campaign, who relied heavily upon assistance from the Obama bunch, and they were out in front doing exactly what the Obama bunch said to do, and that was lie, lie, lie. How many lies was Grimes caught in? You know, she was caught in, good heavens, a handful of lies. And so this is the Democrat way of doing things. And I've heard this for years, and you guys have too. The Democrats really believe that we, the American citizens, don't really know what's best for us. That's why they want to tell us what to do.
Well, and I think it's important because, as you mentioned, she got caught in so many lies. And, you know, it was so bad at one point that PolitiFact, which is the political fact checker that a lot of people use. You know, they give all these Pinocchios and all this other stuff, tell you what's true and lie. They actually went public, you know, about a week before the election and said that Alice in Wonderland Grimes' campaign was the most lying campaign that they believed they had ever had to fact check. It was one of the worst campaigns they had ever seen. And that just reinforces your point. You know, when you had the Obama and Harry Reid, and I'm not saying, and here's the thing, though. People think that I'm sitting here thinking this is a great day for Republicans, and the Republicans did this, the Republicans did that. I'm not convinced of that. What I'm convinced of is that Barack Obama and Harry Reid have destroyed this country so badly over the last few years that people were voting against them as much as some were voting for the Republicans. I don't think that the Republicans earned the election. I think they were given the mandate because there was no other option. How does that sound?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Because to date, even a lot of faithful Republicans can't tell you exactly what the Republicans were running on.
Well, and that's it, you know, and they're even trying to, I mean.
They can't tell you what they ran on.
Well, and that's exactly it. And here's the thing, and I think Paul was actually part of the panel last week with Ken Molman, and you know, we did a panel on the post-election results, and truthfully, I think that was one point we all agreed on, was it not, Paul?
It was. I mean, I tell you, the unanimity of us, and we are all in different parts of Kentucky, and we all have different backgrounds. I think that we have correctly taken the temperature of the American public and why the Democrats continue to want to govern against the will of the American public is beyond my ability to understand. I just don't understand.
Well, I agree with that. And Ed and Paul both said, you know, and I'll start with Ed on this, you know, what do you think happens going forward? Because all of the attention now that these midterms are over, there was a clear mandate given that the people in this country are sick of the liberal left agenda that has destroyed America as we know it. And I don't mean it just here, you know, on our economy or anything else. You still continue to see all of these liberal left dreamers, if you will, standing around saying, well, unemployment's down, the economy's up, the deficit's going down, and Barack Obama's done a great job. You know, and I got to listen to that crap every day, knowing that they're full of lies that they don't know either. Unemployment has not gone down. You don't create 10,000 jobs and lose 20,000 people in the labor force to say that we've created jobs and unemployment is down. You know, they manipulated the numbers so much, and I have to go to George Bush on this. George Bush actually started. He's the one who started changing these unemployment numbers and starting to leave a few things out to make the numbers look better, and Barack Obama took it to the next level on steroids. We're not counting half of the people that are unemployed anymore. So, you know, we look at this, and when you see the jobs in this nation, you know, the actual labor participation rate in this nation, that's where you start getting into the true unemployment. And that's the problem. So you're hearing all these liberal left people, the hardcores are still out there screaming the talking points they were trying to get heard in this election, but the administration was too hung up on telling everybody that you're racist and sexist to really pay attention. So I guess going forward, the next 2 years are very crucial because the Democrats are trying to set up the communist in training, Hillary Clinton, to be their candidate for the presidential election in 2016. And the Republicans are trying to set up anybody but Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. So, you know, what do you think this is going to do to this presidential election? What are we going to listen to for the next 2 years? And what kind of a situation are we setting up? What do you think we're going to get? Ed Martin, let's start with you.
Well, I think first and foremost, I do think the Republicans, I hope the Republicans have figured out, and I think the leadership has, that they didn't really win the election. The Democrats lost. So I think, and I think both parties need to take note of that, the voters will take it away from you going forward. So, you know, come up with something, help some people out, you know, go lead instead of just oppose. So I think I certainly hope that they come up with some ideas. I mean, that's always been one of my gripes. It's all right, you oppose Obamacare. what exactly do you support? Because private health insurance prior to Obamacare and after is a bill racket. Before they passed ACA, I've always made a joke on the radio, Ed. And your private health insurance, there were like two anniversary dates that we dreaded at work. One was the anniversary on the insurance, and the other was on the tax day. So, you know, it's just before, so just saying you're going to get rid of it is not good enough. So what are you going to do? What are they going to do for us? Hello.
I'm here. All right, Paul. Oh, you're okay. I tell you, so basically, you just spent 2 minutes dancing. I love you, man. But come on, what is going to happen over the next 2 years? Do the Republicans get the presidency? Does Rand Paul get his shot? Or is it just going to be business as usual, and this country will revert back to the liberals regardless of what the Republicans do now that they have control of the Congress?
There's way too many things in play to make that call. We're up in the fourth yet. The war is. I mean, you got to think about it. We're starting to double up in Iraq again on armed forces. I mean, anything could happen. Terrorist attack. Escalation in war, a downturn in the economy, any one of the bubbles could pop. I mean, let's face it. You hear a lot of Democrats say bad things about Bush. It's like, oh, Bush this, Bush that, you know, the Bush economy. But, six of the 8 years under Bush were rocking it pretty strong. It collapsed in the last two. That could happen.
Right. So, I give you that.
Totally up in the air, because like I say, you got Barack Obama escalating in Iraq, and definitely plays out better for a guy like Rand Paul, who doesn't believe in that crap, and the American public is sick and tired of it. Probably doesn't work in Hillary's favor, if it's her. So, but by the same token, you got guys like McCain who are going to get in, and Republicans, and they're going to be all full of crap. So,
Here's the thing for me, and this may come out a little wrong. Maybe it'll help make sense of why I'm going down this road so early. Because truthfully, one of the biggest surprises for me throughout this last year, primarily with this campaign and the midterm elections, was how much time the liberal left mainstream media spent trying to build Hillary Clinton up and talk and focus on the 2016 presidential campaign. How much time Rand Paul has spent around the country. We were spending, it seemed like in some ways we were spending more time talking about the 2016 presidential contenders instead of focusing on the midterm elections. And for me, anyway, I saw that as a big deal because it's not something that normally happens. Was I wrong in that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, and that's what I was getting at. Paul, you there? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, there he is. This midterm election just seemed to be we were spending as much time setting up 2016 presidential contenders, and in some cases more time than focusing on the midterm elections, which to me was unheard of. Do you agree? So what can we expect going forward, do you think?
Well, in a sentence, I think we're going to get more of the same in the short term. But what will result from more of the same, I don't know. My hope is that the American public will turn both of these parties out, and we will see the rise of some other political movement, whether it's a movement of independence or as one news article suggested today, that there might actually be a rise of the Hispanic folks in this country to form their own political group. And so they will obviously abandon both Democrats and Republicans and will weaken them.
Well,
you're assuming
they can prove citizenship. Go ahead. That was a bad one. Go ahead.
Well, Obama is going to grant them amnesty, so that's going to become a non-factor, right? Hint, hint, tongue in cheek.
Not necessarily. I'm not sure we'll get that in a second. Go ahead.
Well, I think we need – we're going to have to ride this horse and see where this horse takes us. His horses could turn into a bucking bronco. I don't know. I just don't know. I wish that we could get back to some semblance of civility, and I really would like to see some semblance of stability in the country. I would like to see us go back to a lot of traditional American values, which is you work hard, you get educated, you take care of your business, and you can get ahead. But these two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, they continue keeping us all riled up over one thing or another. We're at each other's throats. And as a result of that, we are not coming together as a nation to solve the underlying problems. I did see a picture today, and you may have seen it as well, where President Obama was over in China, and President Obama was wearing the same clothes, identical clothes, as the Chinese president.
Big
he
surprise.
Was in Chinese garb. Now,
big surprise.
I don't know about you guys, but this sends all the wrong messages. This is all the wrong messages. There's one thing to be courteous towards your host. There's another thing to show submission to your host. And Obama has regularly showed submission, and since he represents the United States, we are being shown that we are submissive.
Oh, I agree with that. And, you know, that's been happening since the very beginning of his presidency when we've caught him over in Saudi Arabia bowing to sheiks. I mean, come on, get real. To show sheer strength, you can't show that submission. And that's kind of one of the reasons we're laughed at around the world. But you touched on something really interesting, a comment, and I kind of want to get some opinion here. And, Ed, you're really going to be vital to this because I tell you why. Paul, you said something that you hoped that people would abandon the two-party system in the presidential election and decide to go a different route, maybe with new party, independence, whatever. You know, but here's the interesting thing. We knew there was a deal made between Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul when Rand Paul came out so quickly to endorse Mitch McConnell in a primary. We knew there was a deal made. Mitch McConnell basically told us, yes, we made a deal, when he said last week that he would back Rand Paul. When asked if that specifically meant the presidency, he went on record and said, well, he hasn't made that determination yet, but I'll back him whatever he decides to do. So that was the trade-off. Rand Paul had Mitch's assurance that he's going to have Mitch's, you know, backing politically, financially, everything, if he decided to make the leap for president. We all know that Rand Paul, a lot of people think that Rand Paul has capitulated a bit to be more mainstream Republican Party, and I've always disagreed with that. And the reason I disagree with that is because Rand Paul is a smart man. He realizes, at least I hope he does, that he can't sit there and be this independent person and build any consensus without failing. That's the problem with the libertarians and the independents today. It's an all-or-nothing situation, in my mind. All right? You know, there's a lot of things you can still do. As much as I hate the two-party system, there's still ways to combat that. So here's the question. Long way to get there, I know. But here's the question. Is Rand Paul the face of the new party or the new political thought process going forward? Is he going to be able to bring these independents, these libertarians, these Tea Partiers, conservatives, smaller government, less taxes, bring all these people together while he publicly has an alliance with Mitch McConnell? Ed Martin, go ahead.
I think so. I think because, you know, and you mentioned libertarians, a lot of them tend to go all or nothing. I like to think when I was a libertarian, as Ken is a libertarian, he's not, you know, there are libertarians that aren't all or nothing, and it would fight similar, they fight similar battles as people do in the major parties. But I think you've got to remember, and especially as we live in Louisville, which is the Kentucky 3rd District, I mean, you simply can't step up and say it's all of this or all of that or all of this. Because even when Mitch McConnell, as they say, trounces House and underground grounds, it's still 40%+ of the people didn't vote for him. They voted for her. So that, for mature people, you have to say, okay, look, unless you win 100% of the vote, you owe it to your taxpaying constituents, your voting constituents, whether they voted for you or not, Dan Johnson, you've got people part ways. And Rand, I think, is actually positioning himself real well. To be honest, I hope he doesn't run. I hope he stays as a senator and builds his clout as a senator. But that's me. But I think he's building it quite well. Oh, on one hand, Mitch McConnell, he's got him reeled in real nicely now. Whether you appreciate that type, you know, that skill or not, he's got Mitch saying, "Hey, whatever the man needs, he's going to get from me." The old guard, you know. And then on the other hand, there's Ted Cruz out there. More often than not, in my opinion, sounding like a wacko. So Rand is positioning himself with the money. He's positioning himself with the you know, libertarians don't like him. They don't love him anymore, but nothing they like him. His position, things like restorative rights and civilization and making a big tent. I think he's positioning him, to be real honest. I would want that in a president, because the last thing in the world I want is, and I think he is a jackass, is like Ted Cruz Huckabee. I want one of those guys in there. They don't compromise. And the fact of the matter is, when you run for president, that's called a landslide. If you get 53 and the other guy gets 47, which if, you know, if you're not going to compromise, you might as well just gas the 47%. No, you have to compromise until you pull 100 or at least mid-90s in your percentages of your win, you compromise, because to do anything less is a slap in the face for people who didn't vote against you. And damn it, they're taxpayers and citizens too.
Okay, Paul, go ahead. All right, well, I'll go ahead. I tell you, a couple of things you said there I would really disagree with, and I tell you why. I personally think Rand Paul needs to run in this election for president, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One, if he doesn't run, then we're going to just have candidates like Mike Huckabee. They're going to be out there screaming about abortion instead of doing his job and worrying about everything that worries America. If he doesn't run, we're going to have the third time for Mitt Romney to come through, which has been a dismal failure. We don't need all of these also-rans. And quite frankly, you're absolutely right about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz can't win no matter what he does. Ted Cruz, to me, is the fringe element, if you will, of some of the things that are wrong with radical right. So when we look at all this in play, for me, Rand Paul is an open-minded moderate who will focus on the issues. And he's not going to focus on abortion. He's not going to focus on gay rights. He's not going to focus on race and sex. He's going to focus on the things that we have to move America forward. And if he's not in this race, then that discussion doesn't happen, win or lose. And right now, I think, after the dismal failure of the Obama legacy and the Harry Reid agenda, I think right now we are more open to that conversation on real issues than we ever were before. And I think last Tuesday's elections proved that. When you look at African Americans like Tim Scott, African American females like Mia Love, all of these people that I keep repeating, people weren't worried about whether you were black or white. They weren't worried about whether you were male or female. They were worried about their economy in this country. And that's what I think we have to have. The question is, when I said all or nothing, Ed, and I really want your response on this, when I said all or nothing, here's what I meant by that. You have Republicans and Democrats who are all or nothing. Republicans will never vote for a Democrat because they're a Democrat, and vice versa. You have the same thing in a two-party system. But at this time, the registered voters, the majority are the two-party system. So the libertarians, when I talk about the libertarians or the Green Party or any other party, when I talk about those parties, they can't get past this all or nothing mindset. At the end of the day, the only shot they would have in any election is to get every available libertarian vote, which isn't going to happen, or every, you know, whatever insert party here vote, which isn't going to happen. And the small amount of votes that you have, the potential, that small voting block, is diluted in such a way that they will never get elected to office and make any differences. So my thing is, when do the libertarians open up All right, because you have a candidate like Rand Paul, a Tea Party Libertarian Republican, is what he basically ran as and got elected as. He brings all of these factions together. Isn't it time to unite behind somebody like that just for a temporary time for the betterment of America and moving the country forward? Or do you stick to this all-or-nothing ideology that's not allowing you to move anything forward? Your thoughts.
I'm in favor of again, compromising. I mean, the libertarians, it's been said that two schools of thought primarily in the libertarians. One is do you, you know, you play the all-or-nothing game, and there are some out there that do that. And then there's others, well, like myself, who just like, okay, let's get into the major parties because right now the game is rigged against them as far as ballot access and everything else. So, you know, as much as you want to play all-or-nothing, as much as voters are put off by the two parties are still in power. They're still writing the ballot access laws and everything else. So, you know, they're not going to be dislodged anytime soon. It'll have to be an inside job. So, that, you know, it'll have to be if libertarians want, independents want that, then they're going to have to go under, not undercover, but they're going to have to go work the two-party system so enough of them can get in to change it. Now, as to clarify one thing, one of the reasons I wouldn't want to see Rand Paul go right now is in part because the Republicans did not win the state house. They, you know, they get the Senate, but and if Rand Paul runs, he for president, he has to give up the Senate seat. And I'm, you know, still at this point, running for president could be a hit or miss. I just hate to see him give up his Senate
seat. But that's a state decision. That's a state decision, and they will address that in January when they go back into session. Go ahead.
Hopefully so. But yeah, I think the time is for compromise. I think it's to a point sometimes that you know the libertarian types and stuff they need to, and the independents need to whatever their political leanings are, they need to go into the other parties and start changing them from the inside because it's clear it's all get out. It's not going to change it from the outside. Because the old guys are going to stay up there, and they're going to, you know, it's their big fundraiser, the two-party system. And they're going to keep it that way as far as how the laws are written. So I'm to a point, you know, and obviously left the Libertarian Party and joined the Republican Party, and you've got to work with the system you've got. And that's just the way it is. It kind of sucks sometimes for some people who really, really, really buy into a philosophy. But, you know, you got to work with what you're given. You got to play the hand you've got. Right now, most independents and most third party types, green, libertarian, constitutional, it's losing hand. And I hate to say that. That's great. And they'll stay around, and they do. And you know, they keep the other parties a little honest. They certainly don't want to capitulate to them. But yeah, and I think the libertarians need to get off this stuff where. I see a lot of the libertarian leanings. Oh, I can't believe Rand is compromising. I can't believe Rand is backing Mitch McConnell. Listen, dude, it's politics. Okay, you know, let me say, until you have 100% majority and you have a single leader who embodies everything everybody wants in that 100% majority, you've got to compromise.
Okay, Paul. Okay. Well, I tell you, there's a lot of
when Martin says something, there's not a whole lot left to be said after that.
Well, I'm just trying to compare, sir.
Every once in a while, it starts off with, "Oh, bullshit."
Well, I'm just trying to be fair, sir. Let me, let me say this, and here's kind of what I'm getting at. I know Rand Paul. I have met Rand Paul on several occasions. We have spoken many times. He's been on this show a few times. You know, I have been to events and listened to Rand Paul speak, and he's probably the most consistent person I have ever heard in politics give a speech. What you see in Rand Paul is what you get. So for me, here's a guy who got elected largely because he wasn't capitulating to the party. He did stand for liberty and Tea Party stuff, which is how he got elected in the first place. He was able to bring all of these different factions of these bases together. So in order for me, I guess for me, when I look at moving forward, I see a guy who has proven it can be done. And if given the opportunity for the presidency, set the stage, and maybe, just maybe, this two-party gridlock would be over. The biggest fear that I have around Rand Paul right now, I've got to be honest with you, this was Mitch McConnell's last election. Mitch McConnell literally has nothing to lose if he makes an enemy out of a friend. He could care less. There is nothing here that makes Mitch McConnell beholden to Rand Paul at all, because he has no elections left that he has to worry about Rand Paul supporting him on. So when I look at this in play, is Rand Paul giving Mitch McConnell too much credit, or is Mitch McConnell, now that he's got, you know, the Senate majority, or he will have as soon as the election is done, now that the Senate majority is in his hands, he gets to make all the rules. Does he leave Rand Paul hanging out to dry, and does that harm Rand Paul going forward? That is a real question for me, because that's where we get to see the loyalty or the rubber hitting the road. Paul, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We're going to move into close, or final arguments, I guess I should say, final thoughts. Well, hell, you know what, Paul, you're there. Give me a quick final thought, man.
Well, the direction that this country should go in is going to have to be guided by the new crop of people and a whole bunch of old Republicans. Now, I'm not as hopeful as a lot of people might be that the Republicans will get us back on track. But I will tell you this, if they fail to honor the mandate that they were given, and that is to go in and fix certain problems, okay, in the next 2 years, they're going to be out, and God only knows what we're going to get then. So we need to keep reminding the reason they got in, and we need to keep reminding them that if they want to stay in, they better listen to the will of the American people.
Agreed. Ed Martin.
Very much the same. I think the timing's good that it was a midterm, because, like you say, fortunately in this case, the media is not a real big fan on the whole, you know, wholesale of the Republicans. So if they get up and, quite frankly, if they pull the same crap, if we start getting these partisan votes, let's impeach Obama. These partisan votes about this, they investigate Benghazi again. If they keep that crap up while people are still struggling to make a living, you know, the big banks are making, you know, if nothing else changes, then a lot of people who put faith in them are going to turn their flamethrowers on. They're going to burn them. They're going to burn them right out of office. It's going to make this election. It's going to make the pledge, you know, the contract with America. It's going to make them all look like nothing, because that is, as much as I hate the two-year election cycle, that is one of the good things about it. By the time these guys get in, you know, another year and a half, they're still playing the same games. I'm more than ready to go after them, because, like, it's one thing if you get elected like Obama, you get in and you do something I don't like, but it's kind of what you got elected to do. I can sort of respect that a little bit. If you get in running against that stuff, and you get in saying you're going to make it better, you get in, you either do this, do that, and then you don't do the same thing, you go back to doing the same crap. I mean, that's like having a dog crap in one spot in your house, and you train, and it goes back to crap in the same spot in your house. You know, the beating is going to be legendary at that point. So I find myself strangely in favor and enjoying the fact that it's like, all right, you boys got 2 years. Actually, less than that, because, you know, campaigning will start in effectively another 14, 16 months, and it's back on. Don't screw it up, because if you do, it's going to be epic what happens to you. And the only downside of that is then the Democrats, whether they do anything worthwhile or not, are going to be swept back into office, probably with Hillary. And we're going to be stuck with it for 2 years till we get a chance to take another one at it. So, you know, I sincerely hope if they work together and they try to fix some of the crap, and that if they go after Obamacare, if for God's sake, put something up in its place, you know, because it does need some work. It does need some fixing. Are they going to do tax reform? Don't just give tax reform to the major corporations and keep stuffing it up everybody else's backside. You know, come on, get to work. This may be getting close to your last chance.
Well, I tell you, it's very interesting to me. I get puzzled, I get concerned, but last week I have to tell you, I have to tell everybody, I was proud of America. And a lot of people who listen to this show, because we do tend to lead conservative a little bit, and Ed, I'm going to cut your mic, and I'm getting all kinds of background noise. You're the only one open right now. I apologize. I was proud of America, not because Republicans had this sweep and everything else. You'll hear Rush Limbaugh and all these other people, you know, sit there and scream, see, that's the mandate, blah, blah, blah. No, I was proud of America because they voted to change the direction of America. After 6 years of this administration, I was none too happy with the Bush administration either, folks. That's the truth. We've talked about that extensively on air. But after 6 years of this administration, after 6 years of trying to divide America on every possible line they could think of, race, sex, gay, anti-gay, woman's right to choose, you know, pro-life, all of these different things, it is the one thing that has kept the liberal agenda in power for all of these years, is their ability to divide us among these social issues that don't make one hill of beans in the daily life of America. So for me, I was proud of America last week because they chose to ignore those issues. They chose not to be divided by race, by sex, pro-life, all of these different things, gay rights, all of these different things that we have been subjected to for the last 6 years by this regime, and I can only say it has been a regime because of the way it's been enacted. I was proud of America by saying, you know what? We don't care about that stuff anymore. What we care about is we can't live our life and realize the American dream. That's why I was proud of America. Some people will take offense to that. Some people will accuse me of partisanship. I really don't care. But there was nobody prouder of America last Tuesday night when I saw these election results come in, and I saw those like a nice 18-year-old girl in West Virginia get elected to the state house after knocking off an incumbent Republican in the primary in West Virginia. Tim Scott, first African-American elected from South Carolina to that position. I was proud. Mia Love, I was proud. Because what I saw was different races, different sexes, even different beliefs. Everybody thinks if you're Republican, you believe the same way. Oh, I think we can prove that to be different. Let's look at those like Rand Paul versus Mitch McConnell. Look how far Mitch McConnell has had to come because of the Rand Paul influence. And that's why I think Rand Paul should be our presidential candidate going forward. Because Rand Paul has proven himself to be a uniter. This isn't a Rand Paul love fest. There most certainly are some things about Rand Paul that I don't like, or I don't agree with, I should say. But I admire what he is trying to do and what he has already accomplished. And the people in America last week proved that we like to see something new. It doesn't have to be Rand Paul, but we want to see something new that's going to move us forward and make our lives better. We are tired of being victimized and made victims by people in power for their own amusement. So America should stand proud and say, hey, guess what? Now we can move forward. And if Mitch McConnell drops that ball, if John Boehner drops that ball, guess what? Ed Martin's right. In 2 years, we hold them accountable. So they better take a great deal of care and responsibility with the trust we just gave these two gentlemen. Because if they don't, as we've proven after 6 years of abuse, we're not willing to put up with it for too long. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here with his Tuesday Night Truth TNT radio show right here on the MVM Radio Network. I'll return on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock with more. We'll get into some Metro Council stuff, some MSD things. And, yes, we'll talk national politics as well and probably Obamacare. We're going to do a whole host of things on Wednesday night at 7. Make sure you call in and get your voice heard. We don't care what it is. That's it for tonight. That's a wrap. Have a good one, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. God bless you. Take care.